Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the HR Cartel podcast. I'm your host, Tim Dyer. Thank you for joining me once again. As always, click follow, give us a subscribe or whatever it says on that platform you're listening to this podcast on. It's going to help us reach more people. And if you find any of this helpful, please do share it around. The whole aim of this is to help small and medium-sized employers, which we're a massive advocate for. So make sure you do that and help others to be aware of what's going on in the world of small business and around them. And thank you for that. I'm going to talk about a few things today. What we've been seeing over the last 18 months, all these HRI law amendments, different changes, and lots of them. Changes in the Fair Work Ombudsman, changes in the Fair Work Commission, changes in legislation and in new bills, giving unions more rights and all sorts of things, changing the way that enterprise agreements can run and different types of agreements you can now make. The list is endless. The list is absolutely endless. People like me have been banging our chests about government overreach and how much these legal amendments are overreaching and impacting the way small and medium-sized businesses can operate. I'm going to talk about a few things today that we're starting to see that manifest. You're going to see evidence of this now. And it's been about 18 months, but that's how long it takes, right? It doesn't happen instantly. It takes a while for unions and other bodies to figure out what the new laws mean, so they can now start to work it into their approach to how they want to treat small and medium-sized employers, all employers for some of these groups as well. But we're going to talk about a few of these things that can demonstrate exactly what we've been saying by overreach. Let's run through a few numbers. This is a source from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, 2023 numbers. Last year, the business sector in Australia is dominated by small and medium-sized enterprises. 97.3% of all businesses in Australia, or around 2.5 million of them, are small businesses with 0 to 19 employees. 97.3%. A further 2.5% are medium-sized businesses employing 20 to 199 employees, and that equals 64,500 companies. Now, the remaining, let's say 0.2% of businesses in Australia have more than 200 employees. Let's paint that picture. 0.2% of the somewhere near 2.5 million companies that operate in Australia employ more than 200 employees. Only 0.2%. The rest employ less than that. They're small and medium-sized employers. Without the resources, usually, without the resources to have legal teams, to have a room full of a room full of counsel, 120 person strong HR teams. They don't have them. Okay, they don't have strong leadership development programs. They don't have the ability to pay for those things. They don't keep up with law. They don't know what's going on. They're trying as hard as they can to survive in competitive markets, not public sector markets where you've got no competitors to worry about. No matter what you do, you're still going to have money coming in. That's a complete different thing. Private sector, commercial, competitive markets, they're busy surviving in that environment. Don't tell me that the laws and amendments being imposed by whatever government you want to talk about, let's not make this a blame game here, but whatever laws get imposed in industrial relations and changes and amendments that continue to be made, don't tell me that this isn't going to affect small businesses. If you're not employed by one of the 0.2% companies out there, in other words, 99.8% of businesses, if you're employed in one of those businesses, you're going to be impacted. The ACTU and unions and all the people pushing for these new rules and rights for employees to be imposed upon employers explicitly state small businesses cannot be exempt. Don't tell me that they're not going to be impacted. Now, what do we have? We're on a slippery slope here, right? We're on a very slippery slope. Something that I'm really concerned about right now, we've been doing a couple of EBA projects, Enterprise Bargaining Agreement projects, okay? That's what EBA stands for. Enterprise Bargaining Agreement projects that we're working on at the moment. I won't name the unions and I won't name the companies that we're working with. But what we're being what we've been given as drafts by these unions who want us to sign onto these enterprise bargaining agreements, to my shock, have absolutely nothing in them about terms and conditions. Not a word. Right? The document has the sections in there where you can enter data, wage rates, allowances, ordinary hours, start finish times, traveling, all these terms and conditions that impact an employee's day-by-day life and how much they can take home, how much they can put, how they can put food on the table, all that sort of stuff, completely absent from these documents. What's in there? Nothing but what their union delegates are going to be getting. Extra allowances. So union delegates who get elected by union members who have the union's interest at heart in your workplace that you're paying. Now, you have an employment contract with these employees, mind you. They're employed and paid to do a specific job that you need to get output to supply your market and get paid for your commercial activity. These members of your workforce will be voted as a delegate. You're going to have to be paying them more money. You're going to have to be paying for them to go away for 5 days at a time or 5 days per year per delegate to be trained by the union on how to come back into your company and run union business. They want you to have to fund, pay for an office in your business, in your workplace for that union delegate, furnish it, put the equipment in there, give them iPads, give them laptops, give them lockable storage, give them keyboards, give them screens and monitors, give them chairs and desks, pay for their electricity, pay for their Wi-Fi. Pay them for every single minute they're working on in a union business. That includes them having the right to interfere with non-union member matters in your workplace. That used to be just union members, right? They used to have to be members of a union where the union delegate could interfere and represent the industrial interests of that employee. Not anymore. Now it's potential employees. That's the specific wording, right? But that's now opened up the doors. What's happening right now as we speak is the Fair Work Commission is drafting wording to put into every single modern award that gives the employers the obligation and the responsibility to do all those things, to fund and supply an office in their business, furnish the office, give them electricity, give them all the equipment, the iPads, the computers, the chairs, the furnishings, pay for everything, and pay them to run union business in your workplace. You have to pay it. That's coming into your modern awards. I urge every employer out there to find a way, reach out to your industry body, right, your peak body in your industry, and make them represent you and respond to the Fair Work Commission. And I'll give you a link in the show notes. Respond to the Fair Work Commission about what wording is allowable, what wording you think should be inserted in these modern awards, because all these rules are coming, right? The government and the bills they've put forward have explicitly stated that union delegate rights are going to be expanded. They're writing that wording right now. Okay, now it's going into modern awards, which means that this isn't a safety net, mind you, too. This is complete garbage, right? Modern awards are safety nets for employees to be given minimum standards. This is all being inserted into the modern awards. So employers cannot escape it. You cannot get away from this. You have an enterprise agreement, it's going to be part of the enterprise agreement as well, because the enterprise agreement has to have better off overall terms than the modern award does. So you're going to have to actually bring this stuff into your enterprise agreements too. You're not getting away from this. Effectively, what's happening here is the union has been allowed to outsource its cost of operating to you, the employer. That's what's happened. You are now paying for union business to operate in your work premises, and you have to pay it if the Fair Work Commission puts that wording in your awards. So you have to go follow the link that's in the show notes and express your interest in sharing or submit a statement, submit something to the Fair Work Commission, contact your peak bodies and get them to do it on your behalf. They represent commercial industries, master builders, clubs, Australia or whatever that is, those types of peak bodies. If you're a part of those industries, contact your peak body and demand that they represent you and put a statement as the Fair Work Commission about how you feel about the wording that it's about to be inserted into your modern award. It's absolutely crazy. It's a very slippery slope. All we're going to do is look back. 2022, Labor gets elected. 2023, Labor abolishes the Registered Organisations Commission and the ABCC. Those two organisations, those two bodies, used to control the behaviour of unions. The ABCC was very effective. You should look up how many tens of millions of dollars in penalties that they got, that they successfully pursued unions like the CFMEU and the ETU and these sorts of unions for their conduct, their illegal conduct. Those were the two bodies that used to monitor and try to control the union from illegal conduct. They couldn't stop them, but they did get penalties through. 2023, Labor appoints, Labor gives the authority over the union conduct and controlling that union conduct to the Fair Work Ombudsman. That same year, they appoint Anna Booth as the new Fair Work Ombudsman. That same year, Tony Burke, the minister, writes a letter personally to Anna Booth, the new ombudsman, and says, I want you to set up systems of tripartism. What that means is the government went to the Fair Work Ombudsman, who declares itself as an independent body, and said, we want systems of tripartism, which essentially place unions at the same table as the employer and the government in, you know, rulemaking and that sort of thing. That's what the government asked for. Anna Booth did respond to that letter, and I don't want to speak for Anna Booth. I don't intend to do that here, but I am aware that she did support that motion, right? She did support that. This year, now we've got the Fair Work Commission right now writing into Modern Awards what the employer has to pay for in terms of giving the union a paid working environment and paying that union delegate for the time away from your business, for training, and for also representing the union in their union business in your workplace, wherever they deem fit, essentially. Now that's being written into Modern Awards, into law. That's a slippery slope. That's not even 2 years. In one aspect of workplace relations, this government has achieved all those things in less than 2 years. I'll go back to my opening comments about overreaching, right? 18 months ago, we could see this coming. I was saying that overreaching is happening, and this government is going to continue to overreach unless someone stops voting for these bills. Here we are. Okay, we're here right now. This is a good example of that slippery slope where we start at one point, it all sounds nice, and now all of a sudden, we've got this imposition where the government is now making small and medium-sized employers pay for the unions to run their own business against you in your own workplace. They're not for you. They are not for you. Don't tell me they're for the employer. They are absolutely not. I just can't see how, I don't see how we got here. It's quite Orwellian, if you know what I mean by Orwellian. Anyway, let's move on to something else. Gender equity reporting. Look, it's no secret, right? The Workplace Gender Equity or Gender Equality Agency, what are they called? What's their name? The Workplace Gender Equality Agency, that's what it is. It's no secret, right? I've been a bit of a critic of their comments, their statements, their methods, their data. Not just me, many people, right? These rules that got rolled out where if you're a private sector employer, not a public sector, mind you, the government's obviously exempt from all this stuff. They make the rules and impose it on you, but it doesn't count for them, right? But if you have more than 100 employees, you have to report earnings, women versus men in your business. The data's rigged, right? It's always going to be rigged. There's no checking, okay, how many hours were worked, how many, what like-for-like levels in the business, not even levels or actual positions. What's the difference between males and females in the same positions? They don't want to know about that because they know that's not a problem, right? That is actually one of the biggest things that gets on a lot of people's nerves. So many people are still pushing that argument that women are paid less than men for the same job. Bullshit. Not true. Absolute garbage. Even the Workplace Gender Equality Agency will tell you that. Go to their website and have a look. Look, go to LinkedIn, look at their posts. Look at what they say to people in comments who start down the path of that rhetoric. It's not true and it's not helpful. If it was true, I'd be beating my chest for it and saying this is completely ridiculous and unfair. I've looked into this. It's not true. People have to stop banging on about that message. That's not what it is. The Workplace Gender Equality Agency is not interested in collecting that data because they know it's not true. It's not going to help their message. It's not going to keep them funded. Right? The data that they had reported. Now, what they said with this data was, we're not going to name and shame. This isn't about collecting information and pointing at companies and saying, look how bad these people are. It's not about that. Trust us. This is about making sure that there's equality for all. No, that's not true. Right? just a month or so ago, these guys named and shamed the worst companies. They even put it on, they ranked them from worst, from best to worst, and they published it. So that wasn't true. They did name and shame you. Now, the next thing was, look, we're not looking, that their message was, we're not, this isn't about punishing companies. We don't want to punish companies who report their data and be open with us and transparent with us. Like, we don't want to punish that. But what's happening now? The Workplace Gender Equality Agency is now requesting the government remove government service contracts from organizations who don't meet the standards, so as far as the Workplace Gender Equality Agency wants them to meet them. How does that make sense? How does that make any sense at all? Let's just think about that for a second, right? Microsoft, massive organization, huge organization, does not meet the standards that the Workplace Gender Equality Agency wants. They get about $45 million or so worth of projects and services from the Australian government each year, and they execute those services. They employ women, many of them. They employ many women working on those exact contracts. What the Workplace Gender Equality Agency is proposing is, because that business has more than 500 employees and it's not meeting the percentages that the Workplace Gender Equality Agency deems is acceptable in Australia, the government now must take those, that work away from that business and send it elsewhere. Where are you going to send it? Where's the competitor that can actually maintain service and keep Australia online and operating? We rely on computers. We rely on software and services. We rely on all these sort of things to operate the whole country. You're going to tell Microsoft that they can't do the work anymore like that because they don't meet your percentage. And who's going to do that work now? Not to mention, you just made all those women unemployed. All those women engaged to deliver those services for the Australian business, probably tens of thousands of them. Now they're unemployed. Who are you really helping here? None of this makes any sense. If the government really wanted to advance earnings in this country for women, we've spoken about this in other podcasts. We've proposed ideas and they would work. The government can afford it. The government can fix this issue tomorrow. If they really wanted to, right? They can fix this gender gap issue tomorrow. Why? Because it's not a workplace issue. Even the Workplace Gender Equality Agency will tell you it's been illegal since 1969 to pay a woman differently than a man for doing the same job. We've had structures and frameworks and systems in place that prevent the country from operating that way, from employers from being able to do that. It doesn't exist. If it did exist, you'll be pulled right over the coals. Our legal system does not allow it. And it's heavy in this country. We've got one of the most complicated, complex and savage workplace relations systems in the world, in Australia. If a company was paying women less than men for doing the same work, that is discrimination. They deserve to be punished and they would be punished by this system. You can't survive in this country by doing that. You just can't. This pay gap is not that. The Workplace Gender Equality Agency has come out time and time again to re-educate its people because its old message was garbage. Its new message is that's not the pay gap. The pay gap is that women, just for whatever reasons, earn less than men. And the major reason is for caring responsibilities. The main reason is that women have this thing that they can do that men can't. Get pregnant. Give birth. Nurture a newborn baby. Men cannot do it. Whatever political argument you want to raise with me on that topic, save it, right? Men can't do that. Women do the greatest job that the human being can ever do. And no one else can do it. That's time off work. Now, there's other caring responsibilities too, right? Caring for sick children, caring for elderly, caring for whoever. They're family decisions. They are family decisions, right? They're society decisions. This cannot be fixed by imposing penalties and removing work and contracts from companies. That's not how you fix this problem. Because who are you going to give that work to? Let's take the Microsoft example, right? Who are you going to give that work to? You'll need 10 businesses, maybe 20, to do the work that Microsoft can do. Because if anyone else has over more than 500 employees who can perform the work that Microsoft can perform, and they also, it's very unlikely they're also going to meet the standard or the percentage that the Workplace Gender Equality Agency sets for those conditions. unlikely that they're going to have a like for like that you can just go, well, you don't do the work now, but you do, right? You have to go to companies who are less than 500 people, right? And then you have to go even lower because they're probably not going to have the same records that you like as well. So you're going to have to go to companies who have less than 100 people because they don't have to report their data. The agency that we're talking about doesn't know how bad or good they are, so they can't withhold contracts from them. So you're going to have companies that have less than 100 people running the technology of Australia. Are you? Come on. Think it through. Jesus Christ. Oh, anyway, it's just absurdity. Let's jump back on that last topic where the commission is now writing into modern awards what the employer must do to house and furnish and take and give a union delegate the right to have an office in your workplace, essentially, and pay them all to run it. Let's say you're a labour hire business, right? Let's say you're a labour hire company. You've got about 200 staff out on labour hire. You work in, you provide labour for the construction industry, the mining industry. You've got administration people in businesses doing business support roles in a city somewhere. Yeah, you might have people in fast food or you, whatever it is, right? Labour hire companies don't always just specialise in the one field. Sometimes they do, but by nature, they provide labour all over the place. You've got construction union, the mining union, the manufacturing union. You've got the administrative personnel. You've got the retail union. Let's say you're a labour hire company that has workers in all those areas. Now let's say that in those workplaces, your labour hire people got voted to be delegates. You've got five unions, right? Now, in your workplace, you're a labour hire business. What does that mean for you? That you, in your workplace now, which is not their workplace at all, right? It's not their workplace. They work for host employers. They are not the employer. The labour hire company is the employer. So now in a labour hire company in Brisbane, in a head office in Brisbane, has to have five different union delegates housed with offices that have all furniture and lockable storage and computers and everything inside their business so the union can run their operations from inside that labour hire company. Those employees aren't employed to work in that business at all, right? It just doesn't make sense, right? None of it makes any sense. This is one of those things where it's just ludicrous. It's the lunacy of just rulemaking and making more rules for rules' sake without thinking it through. It just doesn't work. Let's jump onto something else. Justice Ian Ross was the former president of the Fair Work Commission. He's come out and said something pretty interesting this week, and I agree with it a little bit. He's talking about post-termination restraints. So I don't know how many of you out there use them. I'd say it's a fair bit because most companies that have contract templates and that sort of thing have this clause inserted in there where if the employee leaves or they resign or you terminate them, they're not allowed to do A, B, C, D, and E things within a certain time frame of leaving your employment. Some of those conditions contain rules, or you try to impose a rule that says that they can't work for a competitor in the same industry, or they can't start a competing company up against yours. So that's one of the more contentious elements, right? Well, Justice Ian Ross is saying some things that are a bit silly and saying some things that make a bit of sense. He's saying things like, if a company's going to have a non-compete term in their contracts and actually try to uphold that when someone leaves their employment, then that company should be paying that person for that period of non-compete. Yeah, no, they shouldn't. No, I don't agree with that. He's also saying that in the non-compete, the post-termination restraint clause is one of the restraints which should be removed or unlawful, which is that the exiting employee should be allowed. He's saying they should be allowed to come back and entice your current employees to leave as well, to pull more people out with them when they go. Now, no, I don't agree with that either. That's ridiculous. Again, let's go back here, right, to how we started this podcast episode off. People making these comments that Ian Ross is making, that the unions make, the rules that the government put in place, all this sort of stuff. You know what they're thinking? All they're thinking about is that 0.02% of employers in Australia that have more than 200 employees, up to thousands of employees. They've got the resources. They've got the money. They've got the market share. They've got the profitability. They've got all that stuff that's helping them, and they can survive that. But if you're a small business with 19 employees and one of your managers leaves and then comes back and he's allowed to take five of your people with him to go to a bigger company, That leaves you with, what, 13 people? How you operate? How do you get there? How do you get it done? How do you keep your customers satisfied and maintained? How do you survive in a heavily competitive commercial market? Now, these people, they're not in reality. Do you know what I mean? They're just that they think that everyone's a BHP Billiton or everyone's a Santos or everybody is a Microsoft. And they make these rules and these statements that damage the hell out of small and medium-sized employees and make it awfully difficult to operate in Australia. It just can't continue. It just can't. It's going to start biting soon. And that's when people lose their jobs. And as those ABS numbers tell us, only 0.02% of the employees in Australia can handle these types of changes, can handle these types of rules being imposed. It will impact people who work in small businesses. Let's talk about this post-termination restraint. One element of it that I would say feel free to delete, and I often delete as well, is that element where I said it was contentious. That element you should delete is the inability for an ex-employee to work for a competing company or start their own business and compete against you. That shouldn't be in there. I don't think it should be in there. Of course, there are some circumstances where it may be in the public interest to have that rule in there, sure. But usually you should be deleting that one. Administration assistants and mechanics and people who are just executors that get the jobs done in their businesses. You can't stop them from using their trade, using their skills to make money. Don't try it, right? It's just pointless. But yes, you should make sure that you do have rules in there that says they can't interfere with your customers. They can't ring your customers and say, hey, stop working with those guys. I can do it better for you. Come to me. I'll do it cheaper. They can't interfere with your suppliers, your supply chain. Start spreading rumors through your network and your circle to try and take people away from dealing with you. No, I don't think they should be able to take your employees. Absolutely not. And I think there should be a warning that there will be legal action if they try to do any of those things, because that is commercially damaging to small and medium-sized employers. So all those things should be in there. I don't agree with everything Justice Ross is saying. Not at all. It doesn't make any sense for the vast majority of employers out there. But there are some things that can be done better in those conditions anyway. Look, what I'm going to do is let's wrap it up there. The aim of this podcast episode, really, we don't really plan these out, this content, and try and drive full hard messages home and that sort of thing to you. This is more of a conversation, but the whole aim of what I wanted to do with this discussion today was really just show how the overreach is happening, how it's now starting to manifest, how it's going to impact workplaces, every single workplace in the country, how it has the potential to damage small and medium-sized employers, which, as per the ABS numbers again, 98.8% of employers in Australia are those small and medium-sized employers. They are going to be impacted. I don't know what else we can do here, right? All we can do is vote. All we can do is vote in the right way that is going to protect workplaces around the country. I'm not much of a political person. Workplaces and industrial relations lend itself to political conversations. So that's about as political as I'm going to get. If you don't think it's fair, if you think the union's getting way too many rights, if you're an employer and you don't want to have to house union delegates and pay them while they're doing union business, supply them their furniture, supply them their equipment, their IT, their computers, their iPads, their phones, their Wi-Fi, their electricity, their internet, all that sort of stuff. If you think it's unfair that you have to pay for that in your business, then get your peak body representative to contact the Fair Work Commission and express so. I urge you to do it. I'll put those links in the show notes so you can get access to whatever you need to get to. Until next time, keep it tight, workplace. Thank you for joining me. We'll talk again soon.